Hey, John Mark, it's good to see you. John Mark is muted. Do you want to unmute John? There he is. Hey, stranger.
I like your longer hair. It looks great.
Thank you. Same to you, buddy.
He looks like he combed his beard.
Yeah, it's really nice to see you. It's been quite some time.
It has been a while. Yeah, it's good to see you too, my friend.
Yes, and you know, the last time, I don't know if it's the last time we saw you, but you were here with us in La Vita as we began contemplating, and in fact, it may have been your suggestion, that we purchase a retreat house in La Vita, Colorado. You came here with me and Regina, and we are sitting in our retreat house in La Vita, Colorado.
Cool. Yeah. Really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So, welcome, John Mark Stroud.
Thank you, my friend.
John Mark, if what I'd like to do to begin is have you tell folks. I'm getting a message from Don saying something about the sound. So, are we good to go, Don?
I'm not really sure. It sounded so perfect with Regina, and now it sounds weird and muffled with you. I'm not sure why that is. Was she wearing headphones?
Nope, our speaker's doing some weird stuff. I don't know. How do we sound now, Dawn?
The same.
How do we sound now, Dawn?
You want me to go get it? What are you going to get, man?
Don, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I mean, it's okay, but it just didn't sound as clear and crisp as earlier with Regina. Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's all good. We need to make sure that we're on all fours. I'm hearing it again.
Were you sitting there when I was teaching?
No, she wasn't.
You probably can't sit there, unfortunately.
Sorry, John Mark, for the technical issues. We'll get them resolved and get going here. Yeah, in fact, this is our first satsang in a while, but our first satsang at the retreat house. So again, we're so glad you're here with us.
Wow, I feel honored. Thank you.
Yeah. So what I'd like to do to start is you had an awakening experience, I understand, several years ago, and I thought it might be helpful to our listeners, if you would describe, well, whatever you want to around that awakening experience.
I will simply say this. I had an experience of my own nature and reality that was so far out of the context of everything I had ever experienced that I knew something greater to be realer than anything I had ever known. It's awful easy, having had one of those kind of direct experiences, you can call it of grace, of truth, of self, whatever you want to call it, and think that you're done. It was really nothing more than a big, swift kick in the ass for me to get on about the work of coming to abide in that state of consciousness. So it wasn't a free pass. I'd like to have thought it was. I wish it were that easy. But it did provide the necessary context for me to have utter discernment within my own being between kind of eternal truth and temporal transient reality as we experience it. And having that level of knowing beyond ideas or concepts, but a direct inner knowing of that is really important to, or it was for me, to certainly help me continue the journey of releasing the things that I needed to release that I was attached to, so that I could come ever closer to that self that Regina was talking about when I got on. So I don't really want to go into a lot of details about it, because oftentimes it was perfect for me, but it's really easy for us to contrast our experience against somebody else's and find ourselves lacking, or why did this schmuck have that experience? It sounds so much easier, blah, blah, blah. So I'd rather come to where we are right here, right now, honoring all of us in our unique journeys where we are, and see where we can go together.
Well, and I appreciate that, John Mark. Part of the reason that I ask that is because I wanted to talk about that as your awakening experience as a beginning, because it seems to me, I confess that I'm cheating a little bit because I read your recent article in Miracles Magazine.
Oh, wow. Well, there you go.
Well, yeah, and it seems like there's been a transition for you, even since I saw you, you know, a couple years ago, and we had an opportunity to sit down and chat. So for me, it's significant that there was what seemed to be an awakening experience, and that there was a journey from there, an ever opening journey. And I just thought maybe you wanted to talk about that journey.
Sure. The beauty of our eternal nature is that it is simultaneously unchanging and eternally unfolding, which is just the sexiest thing in all of creation, really, because there's not a finish line there, but we can finish with what we're finished with. We can release and let go of what we no longer need or what no longer serves us. But it's not that we arrive at a state of stagnation or an end. You know, many of you in your own journeys, I'm sure you've had those moments of, I'm frigging exhausted at this, and I want to be done with this. I want to be finished with this. I want to just wake up and arrive. We can, of course, have some of those types of experiences, but eventually what we discover is that we arrive into more and more of self, capital S, self, unfolding in, as, and through us wherever we are. And that is ceaselessly new. This was kind of, the Christ was pointing to this when he said, "Behold, I make all things new." He never said, "Behold, I'm finished and thank God, I'm done." But we can finish with aspects of our journey. There are times when we move beyond watching thought, and that kind of mind training that we start in A Course in Miracles, and we move more deeply once we realize the utter valuelessness of thought, no matter how glorious the thought needs to be, no matter how perfectly we can think just what we would label as true or spiritual thoughts. They're still utterly useless. They're valueless in that all they are symbols. They're not the self itself. They're not the truth. They're concepts or ideas or an ongoing commentary about it. But if you've really devoted some energy to mind training and you've made that transition to be able to manifest that level of, quote, thinking, it feels really good compared to what it was. But the shoe will drop and you'll go, well, what now? And then we move beyond thought and mind watching into the subtler aspects of being, the subtle energies, the movement of existence itself that gives rise to thought, that gives rise to all manifestation, or that populates the dream that each of us uniquely have and experience. So it's very rewarding and nice to be finished with portions of our journey. For instance, if you're going from here to Europe and you had to go from where you guys are in Colorado all across the United States, you'd be finished with wheeled vehicles when you got to the coast. And then you would take a different kind of journey. And the different kind of journey across the ocean will require a totally different set of skills than what you might have mastered to get you to the shore. And while this can seem, oh my God, when will this awakening ever end? It begins to get much more exciting because you are in that eternal moment of unfoldment, because you're no longer trying to fix or correct or make right something that you've perceived as wrong, because those things have been healed in your body, and you're becoming an ever greater vessel through which the self can express. And that's kind of new and exciting. So stages of our journey certainly end, And it would be really nice if it was this just real nice, gentle bell curve. But as you guys know, it's up and down and can be all over the place. And you have 2 weeks of clarity, and then you go home for Christmas and the wheels fall off the bliss bus. And, you know, you're back to look at some territory that you thought you were finished with.
Yeah.
And that's just, the universe is incredibly benevolent in showing us aspects of ourselves where we're still dreaming, where we're still holding on to perception and clinging to that rather than the knowing. And I call that capital K knowing or gnosis, that we would be informed by the self. So thank God we can finish with things, and thank God there's an eternal unfolding going on.
Thank God. Yes. Yes. John Mark, there's no question that our paths are highly individualized, as Jesus says in the Course.
Well, I think that might have been his most understated word in the whole thing.
Highly
individualized. I would go so far as to say utterly, gloriously unique.
Yeah.
And despite the fact that we tend to rest in some level of self-judgment early in our journeys, they all contribute an incredible uniqueness and diversity to the tapestry of creation. They're all contributive to this incredible expression of the self through the dream of separation. So none of our journeys are worse or greater than another, but they're all equally, utterly contributive.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you come to that, and you can really own your own journey without any judgment as it was, without needing to correct it in your mind and put a nice big spiritual ribbon label over it, you know, you can see your warts, you can see the guilt, you can see all of that stuff, and can hold it in the self, you begin to appreciate incredibly, joyfully, effortlessly, your brothers and sisters' journey, because you know them to be just as unique, just as creative, and equally relevant to the self, equally relevant to the self in its exploration of knowing thyself, so to speak.
Beautiful. Thank you. I appreciated that. And that that's part of the journey. I often forget. It's like, hey, get out of the way. I got to awaken here, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. But what I wanted to ask you is, despite the fact, or along with the fact, that it's highly individualized, I wanted to ask you if you felt like that there were waypoints, hallmarks, the right word won't come to mind, that there are portals that we all have to pass through. There are certain stages on the journey that we all have to pass through.
I would say yes, in a really general kind of sense. And the thing is, you won't ever see them until you're through them. You won't have the capacity within consciousness itself to truly see and know until you've passed through it. It's kind of the forest for the trees type thing. And if I could offer one benefit, it would be stop trying to measure your progress. Because to do so is to create a mental image in your own mind, or take other people's experiences, create your perceptions of what they are. And me or anybody else, no matter what anyone tells you about their experience, you don't actually know that it's true. Even if they tell you, you don't know that they're actually telling you the truth. And it's not that they may be intending to lie, but memory is an incredibly inaccurate, fickle, and totally useless thing.
That might be somebody's phone right there.
So don't bother trying to measure your journey. Be present with your experience, because that's your present moment threshold. That's your present moment portal, if you will. It is, you know, the longer I've taken my journey, the more I'm able to recognize where others who are sent to me seem to be in their journeys, and also those who seem to be maybe a few steps, appear to be a few steps ahead. And just let your journey be yours. If we would each walk our own pathway with as much authenticity within as possible, things would go much, much quicker. And I think, you know, Jesus in his attempt to help speed things up provided these modern day pathways. I think they're double-edged swords because they can provide acceleration, but they also create this perception that it's a box and this way is the way or that is the way. And we expect our experience to be like other people's. So I think it was a real calculated decision on his part. You know, do we give this? Because any teaching can become equally a trap as it can become liberating. You know, when we become students of something, we can very easily get stuck in it, trying to master it in our mind rather than coming to know it within our own being, our own spirit. So walk your own path with the joy that you have and leave everybody else to themselves. I mean, it can be really helpful to work in community, but it can also fuel an incredible amount of competition almost. I mean, I've seen spiritual competition out the wazoo. I mean, on both sides of the equation, whether we're one-upping someone with our spiritual experiences or we're one-upping them or one-downing them with the degree of our perceived suffering. So it's really important to walk your journey because that's the only one that will bring you to where you want to be. It is the only one. So use the pathways, the teachings as I say they're like toilet paper. They're very handy to have when you need them. But once you've used them and you no longer need them, you don't frame them and put them on a bookshelf and go, wow, look at what I've done.
Yeah. I appreciate that. And of course, you spoke to that in your article in Miracles Magazine. Two things come to mind. You talked about living in the not knowingness and really living in the experience and throwing the teachings out and just experiencing that. Would you like to address one of those two issues?
Well, they're certainly directly related. Most of our journeys, if we're really, really honest with ourselves, we'll come to realize that all my studying and all my efforting and all my striving, underneath it all, it's this idea that if I do enough of this, I'll find a way to be safe. Mm. I'll know enough. I'll know how to act, how to not act, how to respond, how to not respond, how to talk to somebody so that they'll be loving to me instead of project, whatever. And in that process, we lose sight of the real truth, which is this moment has everything contained within it. If I can be present to this moment rather than using all this archive of teachings to try and help tell me how to be oriented to the moment, the self that Regina was referring to is not only oriented to the moment, it is the moment. And it's everything that is expressing in the moment. And I liken it almost to like a river. When you pick up that thread, that subtle flow that is, you know, you could call it the mind of God moving into manifestation or the breath of God, you want nothing more than to be on the leading edge of that, which is always here and now. And the only way we can truly do that is to meet the moment unknown. Because if we take all this stuff that we've learned to try and keep us safe and we drag it into the moment to help us orient, we're actually not anywhere near now. We're not anywhere near present. You know, what Yeshua calls the holy instant is when we're here free of our past and free of a need for any outcome. That's when we can truly, and the only way you can be there is to be in the unknown, because you're giving up all of your perceptions. You're giving up all of that. And we can't actually come to truly let all that go until we realize our eternal nature deeply enough that we finally realize my eternal nature is where I'm safe. I don't need to hold all this stuff in mind. I don't need to hold all this stuff to try and be safe, because my very nature as light or awareness or consciousness or whatever you want to call it is already utterly, radically safe, utterly, radically free, and utterly, radically capable of meeting the moment wide ass open and experiencing whatever is going to be, whatever's coming.
Yeah, well, essentially that's that trust that you're talking about there is what's required in order to let go of all our own self-protective mechanisms, right?
Yeah, well, let me just do a survey here. Who here has worked on trying to trust more? This by a
trying to trust what? More.
Trying to trust more. Yeah. That sucks, doesn't it? I mean, it really, really does. I think this is one of the traps we get in our mind, convincing us, I don't trust enough, so I'm going to trust more.
Right.
Anybody ever, how do you do that? I mean, for God's sakes, what am I going to do? Just start saying words like, oh, I trust more. Trust is really an utterly natural thing that grows and evolves through direct experience. You know, if you need to come to trust that your light is always on, you've got to look with it and at it long enough to realize it never diminishes. So trust isn't an action that we do. It's the realized manifestation of how we're using our consciousness. And that comes naturally and effortlessly through, as Regina said, turning back towards the self. It's natural. It's self-luminous. It's not through effort or striving that we come to greater trust. So I'd tell you all, abandon trying to trust more. Because if you're doing that, you got to be really honest with yourself. Well, I'm trusting doubt, really. I mean, that's the truth of it. I'm trusting doubt. I'm trusting these words in my mind. I'm trusting my past is telling me what my future will be. I mean, just be really honest. Well, what the hell am I really trusting? I mean, you can look at it that way and actually release some stuff rather than, you know, get on your hamster wheel in your mind or whatever and start trying to trust more. Because trust will come very naturally, very effortlessly when it's authentic. And it'll come through your own direct experience. I mean, we all trust that the sun's going to come up tomorrow. Nobody lays in bed thinking, oh, my God, I got to trust that the sun's going to come up tomorrow. Oh, shit, I really got to work on this because if I don't trust it, it might not happen. I mean, what would then happen, you know? So it comes really naturally like that when we get away from our mental concepts about it and we turn within using that light towards the source of that light itself, you'll just know. And the longer you look within, not in a suspicious way to find all the screwed up beliefs that you have, but looking in an utterly wonder-filled, innocent way, what is this light? If I use this light and I look upon it with that light, whether you want to call this being aware of awareness or being conscious of consciousness or, you know, whatever, it will come naturally. You will know it's always on. No matter how many times I look away and get distracted by what's outside, when I turn within, it's there. And that trust will come as a very natural outcome of that. And that's when it's authentic. Because it's not contrived, it's not efforted, you're not trying to talk to all your friends about how much you trust, because if you say it out loud and you claim it in that way, then it will be. It's just much more organic and natural process.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute, this awareness, watching awareness, or self-inquiry or meditation. Could you tell us a little about your experience with that, or what is helpful in terms of be still and know?
I teach the way I was kind of taught by my own inner guidance, this what I call spacious presence, because oftentimes it's been my experience within my own experience and talking with others that awareness, watching awareness, becomes this primarily mental thing. And it feels like we're really doing it with our thinking minds. It's something we're doing. And if you actually feel, you'll feel most of the awareness, or your light tends to be focused around your head. I started there because that's, I was in my head just like everybody else. But I was quickly moved to a greater feeling communion with the spaciousness that is all of existence. You could call it mind if you want. You're really into the course lingo. But I was taught to rest in it as a feeling communion, not just a point of awareness looking at awareness, because as I said, that can distract us into a mental thing about it. But if I wanted to embody it, I needed to know it. And here's the simple example. You all have this simple capacity to know, which is beyond thinking. So if you need to go to the bathroom, and I'm talking about number two here, you know, a feeling will come, and without any thought, you know, oh, I can drive 20 more miles, or I have to clinch, and I hope 20 steps will get me there in time. Right? There is a direct, immediate gnosis that informs us, and we know it through feeling, and the feeling communicates more. Your mind may immediately go, oh my God, I got to get there really quick. But the feeling will tell you everything that you need to know. So what I was taught was how to come into a feeling communion using the full measure of my being and the body being the anchor. You know, it's really easy if we're Course in Miracles students primarily, you know, I'm not a body, I'm free, I'm created as I was meant to be or whatever. So we want to push the body out of the way like it's wrong or bad. How many of you have tried to be present with your minds, meaning be right here, right now? Everybody's tried that. Have you ever been perfectly successful with it? No. Oh, Hal. Well, Hal's been perfectly successful with it. I'm going to give you the mic, Hal, and you can teach me. We may have moments where we're perfectly good at it, but has it ever occurred to you? Your body is utterly, perfectly, without any effort, absolutely present. None of us have lost our body last week. None of, you know, Jacqueline's got, you know, whatever, if she's still judging, she's got work to do. So her body's not run ahead into next week. The body is this absolutely incredibly, it's a master of presence, not a thought-based presence, but an actual presence-based presence.
Yeah.
I was taught how to use my body as an anchor to the eternal present, and through the anchor of my body, be in a feeling communion with capital S self, and letting that still small voice of self inform me, not in words, not in spiritual dissertations, but in the very subtle things that beat the heart of this body, that do all the things that need to be done. And I know it because I feel it, not because I have a belief about it.
Right.
Yeah. Beliefs, my God, what a friggin' burden these things are.
Yeah.
I mean, when you truly come into this level of communion, you begin to drop beliefs like crazy, because there's so much effort and they only serve to get in the way and limit how this feeling communion, this knowing can move you. There's a stage where it's really important to learn that I can replace the belief I'm a piece of shit with I'm a child of God. Well done. But that's just a stage. We move past that where we don't even need a belief anymore. And that's when true peace comes to the mind, not because it's got to rigidly hold new spiritual beliefs with even more tenacity and more willpower than the crazy, insane ones you might have had before, but because the mind lets go and becomes this spaciousness that joins this, I don't even call it the quantum field, you can call it mind itself, whatever, that we would label as this infinite field of potential, which is Christ mind or consciousness or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. So John Market, from a practical perspective, I think I understand what you're talking about, being in, being here now, being in this experience, being in communion with the body as a portal. But let me make sure that we're speaking the same language. I have been practicing recently with really just going, okay, what is the most real thing I can say about what my experience is right now? And it may be, I may be experiencing what I would label anxiety, but it's like a fluttering in the chest. Okay, I can feel that. Can I open to that flutteriness? Mm-hmm. You know, it may be it's cold in the room or it's loud in here, or, but it's just really, for me, it's really just recognizing what the experience is. And rather than trying to shut it out, say that I shouldn't be doing that or whatever, just open to that. And when I say open to that, what's been helpful for me is to, breathing through my heart, which is a weird phrase, but it seems to work for me, as opposed to trying to shut down, keep apart, keep away. It's more a movement in the opposite direction. Does any of that make sense to you?
It does. And let's celebrate that that's what works for you.
Fair
that's
enough.
The important thing. I mean, it's like, you know, if that's that would work for you, don't wear somebody else's shoes. Wear the ones that fit for you. Because there's no universal practice or modality that's going to work for everyone. If we would finally free ourselves to take the path of least resistance, your own spirit's going to reveal to you what is perfect for you. Now, this, you've got to build that trust by receiving the intuition, acting upon it, having your experience, and then moving on and not get addicted to that as a practice.
Well, I appreciate
practices
that.
You're supposed to let go of. I mean, we're gonna, right. We want to get to the point where, you know, we're just like existence or creation moving with that flow. But there's, Jacqueline mentioned a couple of things. You said earlier how you would speak about or share what your present experience is. And you mentioned this kind of fluttering in the heart, and it was labeled anxiety. Well, I could tell you I have fluttering in my heart, and it ain't nothing to do with anxiety. But the point is, how we label our experience will actually shape the experience.
Right.
And when we can get past the need to label the experience and just learn to experience our experience, say, without the minds labeled, without the need to tell somebody else, because what you're experiencing is for you. You don't necessarily need to tell anybody else. They got their own experience to be experiencing. But experiencing your own experience in its fullness, without the labels, with an incredibly curious and wonder-filled mind, not this shouldn't be happening, but this is what's happening.
Yes.
Am I willing to be fully present with this? And maybe that flutter is actually your heart chakra getting lit up, but your egoic mind has been trained to shut it down, because this is what we've done. We've all used our egos to suppress the spiritual impulse, to suppress the miracle impulse, to push away. So it might be that that's actually a heart opening that's trying to happen, but the habituated past, and this is why he says, don't bring your past with you into this moment. It may be about to, it's calling for something. It's looking to express in some way. But if we do how we've done, assuming anything that, I like to share this sometimes, don't assume the unfamiliar is bad.
But we do.
And don't assume the familiar is correct or normal. You know how many times people say, well, I just don't feel right. I don't feel normal. I don't feel like myself.
Whew,
those are doorways. Those are great opportunities to be in a new relationship to what you're feeling. And let that feeling, let that come forth in what I call gnosis, revealed to you beyond the mind. Because if any of you have been on the spiritual journey, you have to admit, my mind is poised like a stinking cougar, ready to jump on any experience that is not what I have already determined is spiritual.
Yeah.
Have you ever considered the burden that you drag into the moment with that? What if I let that go and learned as light, as consciousness, as awareness, I'm safe, And I got into a very different relationship with my present moment experience. Rather than looking for what's wrong about it, I wonder if I might discover I'm totally safe to experience any and everything.
Right.
Rather than trying to fix and prescribe something that should be different. Because the true freedom, the true liberation is not, I only have kumbaya experiences. It's this radically free ability to experience all things in utter freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when life blooms and takes on an incredible, incredible richness. And when you stop pushing against the experiences you don't want to have and stop grasping for the ones you want to do, your very relationship to experience and to existence begins to change. And it's really a glorious thing, not because they're all good, but because they're all life.
Right. Yeah. Amen. Beautiful. John, Mark, I want to look at, see some folks have said some things on chat. Let's see if we have some questions here.
Let me address Hal first.
Okay, you go right ahead.
Hal had a beautiful comment here, surrender to what is. Who all's heard this? This is one of the most distorted, misunderstood teachings in all of spirituality. And Hal, I'm not assuming yours is wrong, but I'm gonna talk about it a bit. Most of us perceive surrendering to what is the things that come and go, the temporary, the weather, how I'm feeling, what someone else is doing, politics, you name it. But all of those things that we would label as what is are what Yeshua would call illusions. They're things that have beginnings and ends. The true surrender to what is the surrender to the self that is unchanging and unchangeable forever. And when we can truly surrender to what is, light, consciousness, awareness, self, God, whatever you want to call it, and we can be what is, then we are able to be with what is happening. Because all the things that are happening are always temporary. They come and they go just like everything else. But if you've tried to be with the temporary while you think you're temporary, that's scary as shit. Because you're certain that the temporary things are never going to stop. And if these temporary things can hurt me because we perceive that we're temporary, it can be really, really traumatic. And I have seen people in spirituality bring great trauma upon themselves with this surrender to what is. It's just almost like this perpetual state of suffering they bring upon themselves with their stuff coming up and whatever. But the only way to truly be with what is happening, the temporary things, is to rest into our eternal nature as light itself. That which is unchanging and unchangeable forever. It's only from that place of true safety, which for me was never a surrender. I mean, this whole idea that I had to surrender to something never made sense to me. For me, I had to accept my true nature as this. And once you learn how to rest as that, at one with what truly is, because it's unchanging and unchangeable, then we can truly be with what is happening, the temporary things that come and go. And that brings us, that's our being not of the world, but yet in the world, being the eternal present to the ceaseless unfolding of temporary experiences. Because it's the only place you can truly experience them with a place of, from a place of utter safety, from a place of utter allowance. And from that place, there's never any suffering. The suffering is when we identify as the temporary, trying to be with all these overwhelming, big energies that are temporary, because we haven't rooted into what truly is. So it's a very worthwhile exploration of what is. And for Jesus, he defines what truly is that which is eternal. not the temporary.
So John, how do you move from one to the other? I mean, particularly if, again, with all the misunderstandings that come through being a long-term student of the course, for example, how do you move from the temporary surrender to the temporary to this place where you're talking about, from experiencing from the truth of who you are, this place of eternalness, this unchangingness? And I get what you're saying, but how does one move from one place to the other?
Well, isn't that what we're all about here? We're all on our unique journeys to there. And if anything I'm sharing is contributive to you, I hope you may use it. If not, throw it out like that toilet paper and, you know, make your own way. The first thing I would say, Jacqueline, is give up trying to get from here to there.
Thank you.
Because if you're playing the either or game, you're going to suffer. Mm-hmm. Because you're actually empowering your own being in separation. The real, if there's a trick to it, it's being the eternal, which enfolds all temporary experiences. When we try and separate one from the other, we suffer because we're actually manifesting the very separation that we think we're trying to wake up from and overcome.
Right.
So, you know, I could certainly share, but it would take a lot more time and a whole lot of practice, or at least it took me. So some of you may get it just like that. It sticks and it'll never go away. Like, you know, pin the awareness right on the donkey. It's not about getting away from. I bet if we were all honest, every one of us would probably say, I want to wake up because I'm trying to get away from something. I'm trying to get away from earth. I'm trying to get away from suffering. I'm trying to get away from being responsible for money. I'm trying to get away from bad relationships, whatever it is. We're trying to get away from something. And what we come to discover when we do awaken to this self, which is within, and it's within all of us right now. It's not like it's, you know, some obscure thing. We make those things up in our mind to further create the distance. It's present within each of us right now. If it wasn't, you wouldn't even be aware that you existed, and you wouldn't have any consciousness to even engage with what we're doing here together tonight. So get rid of this. I have to move from the temporary to the temporal. And there are simple ways to become aware and pure awareness still requires movement of temporary things in order to know its eternal nature. So it's actually that the eternal and the temporary, they're actually one. Because how does what never changes have experience unless they're all manner of things that change in which to experience? And no temporary thing can come and go if there wasn't an already existing eternal field with which they come and go in. So they're actually one. We're not overcoming a separation by getting away from the temporal. We're finally bringing back together an original wholeness so that we can experience the temporary no longer separate from our eternal truth, from our eternal nature, from our oneness with the source. So it's almost a little counterintuitive to the mind that says, okay, temporary bad, gotta go, eternal good, where are you? You know, to stop that attempt, because it's futile.
Yeah.
And actually find how they have eternally been one. And this is when forgiveness truly ends, when you realize that you've never been separate, and that nothing ever needs to be forgiven. Not as a concept or idea, because we've all tried that and our shit still pours forth, right?
Yeah.
But when those two things come back together as one, we know that we were the self in that expression, and it's all very, very good. It doesn't have to be forgiven. It doesn't have to be overcome. It's actually one of the greatest gifts you can give yourself to come to that level of wholeness, not because you've purified. And this is one of the things, you know, look at the course, you have to be purified. Have you guys ever asked yourself, what database of purity am I using to judge what should stay and what should go? I mean, what belief system do you use to evaluate your belief system? Because think about it. What criteria do you use to choose what needs to be forgiven and what doesn't?
Well, we can't do that, obviously. That's not up to me.
But don't we spend an extraordinary amount of effort doing just that?
Yes.
So when that truly ends, when this eternal self and this little self come back together, you know, in your own sanctity and the own sovereignty of your own unique consciousness, they come back together, that's when forgiveness really ends. And it's not because you finally have mastered it in mind, or you finally have gotten every crumb out of the corner of your, you know, depth of your mind, and you've sifted through every past life that you could regress to. It finally ends because you know that it's not affected your eternal nature. And all my journey ever served was to reveal my eternal creative freedom. Every bit of it. Every guilt, every shame, every projection, every attack, every broken heart, every lifetime as a murderer, every lifetime as a trying to be a saint, you name it. All of it revealed nothing but my infinite creative freedom. So I hold my journey in reverence, not in forgiveness. And I offer it as it was to anyone who would wish to look upon it and take it within their own being. Because it's a rich journey, a very, very rich journey.
Sweet, sweet. Thank you, John Mark. That's sweet. I felt
Kyle,
that.
Thank you for letting me use your quote here to get us working on what is.
What I want to do now is invite the folks who are in the virtual room and the folks who are in the room here with me at the retreat house to ask questions. And I'm not sure that I've got the proper setup here to see who might be raising their hands. So, Don, you might want to help me with that. But y'all jump in, because that's one of the benefits of this kind of setup. So,
well, while I'm doing that, I noticed that many of you have taken on a much more relaxed physical posture. Doesn't that feel great? You know, because I'm not sharing things to be mastered or to be done or encouraging you to try harder. I'm just sharing directly from my own experience, and something is bringing about a state of ease in many of you. I can see it. I can feel it. Oh, that's your own knowing. That's that spirit self informing you beyond mine. Oh, relax.
So anybody here in the room want to have a question they want to ask John Mark?
I see it. Susan has a question.
Oh, okay. Please. And George has his hand raised. Yeah. So
Susan and Dawn and George.
All right.
Who's first?
I'll go. Hi, John Mark. Thank you so much for being part of the evening. And I have kind of I'm very curious in this relaxed atmosphere. What is your setting right now? Are you in an RV, or are you, what room are you in?
I'm in my Airstream.
I thought so. That's great.
Yes. There's the aluminum ceiling, and there's the kitchen.
Oh, a tour. Love it.
There's the living room. And just back there down the hallway is the bedroom. It's very small.
I find it fascinating. I love it.
Thank you.
Just kind of gives more bearing to who you are, and just please know how much I've enjoyed listening tonight and hearing your perspective. It's really, really, really nice. Thank you.
You're welcome, Susan. Cindy and I love we call it being home free.
Yeah.
When we realize our own eternal nature, and that was true anywhere, place no longer meant to us what it did. Possession no longer meant to us what it did. What called to us was the exploration of our freedom. So we're living full time in an Airstream, and having the ability to move freely across the country is just the outpicturing of our own inner condition, an own inner freedom, a no longer needing to be identified with place or thing, but rather the joy of being in discovery of life and moving freely.
And I assume that transition for you was not a difficult one to make. It sounds like it was a very natural one.
It was very easy for me, but Cindy had a very different journey about it. So if you ever get a chance to talk with her, she was very frightened by my woohoo, let's go, you know, this kind of abandon for life that I had come to. She had to come to it in her own way and in her own journey and her own time. And I'm not saying, hey, you know, when you wake up, you're going to go want to be an RV and be free. You may feel to nest even more deeply than you ever have before. I don't know what you guys will experience, but for us, it felt like a very natural outer expression of the nature of our own inner being.
Always amazing what the adventure brings. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Susan. And I honor your journey.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay, I'm still having a hard time seeing who has their hand up.
George wanted to go.
I'm going to jump in there, Jacqueline.
Thank you, George.
Hi, George.
Hey, John. You know, you haven't mentioned your ministry, Waking Up with the Movies. I've enjoyed many, many of your movies, probably most of them. And I'm sure most of the people here know that you have that ministry. So I just wanted to say how much I enjoy your presentations there.
Well, George, thank you very, very much. They were an extraordinary fun thing to make. I don't make any more of them. Cindy and I don't go to the movies like we did at that stage of my journey. That's one of those things that it was an important stage of my journey, but once I was beyond it, I let it go and haven't made any more. They're there and they're free and available. If they speak to anybody, great. But just know I'm not the same being now that made those then. Use them as joy and entertainment, but if you don't need them, hallelujah, and move on to whatever's next.
Who else? Do we have other questions for John Mark?
Dawn had her hand up.
Dawn.
I was putting my hand up because no one else was, so I was just trying to be a brave soul.
Well, all righty then, everybody. Take a deep breath. Dawn's going to be brave.
Anybody else wants to go? Go ahead.
Stick my head in here.
Yeah, Regina's here.
I'm going to stick my head in here. Hi, John Mark.
Hey, Regina. I love you.
First of all, it's really, really good to see you.
You too, my friend.
You know, I mean, I just love you. And having you right here in front of me reminds me of how much I love you.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. So we want you to come see our house. You know, the one right here in La Vida.
That would be lovely. Next time we roll west, it's a guarantee.
Well, and there are RV parks right here in town, so that should be easy to do.
But not enough room in the driveway, huh?
Well, maybe. I mean, you know, just to park it there. We're in a zoning area where you couldn't stay in it here.
Okay. But you're still in your old house, so there's room next door?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right, great.
Yeah, you could park it at my house, and we could drive down here. That would work.
Okay.
That would work perfect. Yeah, and then you can just stay here in the house. But aside from all this chitter-chatter, I wanted to know what you were up to, because last time I saw you, you were going to do something I think you didn't do, which was take this huge boat trip. Do you remember telling me about that huge boat trip?
I do. We did not take the Great Loop.
So I just want to know what you're up to. That's my question.
We live an incredibly simple life. It's not complicated. We don't have big agendas. We don't have some big spiritual manifesto that we're supposed to be fulfilling on behalf of God to liberate all our friends. You know, we don't have any of that. We have an utterly simple life that moves us in the ways that we're moved. Cindy likes to do a lot of crafts. She does felting. I don't know if any of you ever, where she takes wool fibers and creates these incredible scarves and 3D stuff. It's really, really fun. We are sharing a version online of what I call Beyond Belief into Presence, where I share how I was taught to come into what I call attunement or alignment to the self within. No longer as ideas or concepts, but as a living, breathing manifestation of what that self is. And we're having a good time with that. Sometimes it feels an awful lot like teaching, and that almost makes my stomach turn. Because at my own level of awareness, how can you teach someone what they already are? I mean, yeah. We can point to ways in which we all use what we are. We use consciousness. We use light to create shadow and distortions and all manner of stuff like that. But we're sure having a good time sharing experientially what Cindy and I have come to embody for others. If it resonates with them and they're drawn to it, great. If not, then, you know, the universe will provide for them. I love to play pickleball. Have any of you guys heard of this game, pickleball?
No, I saw you laying on the ground after a round, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was like my first week. That, you know, everybody gets like an introductory injury. Then when you get past that, it's good. It's this great game. It's kind of like on a badminton court with a low net played with an oversized ping pong paddle with a wiffle ball, like we used to play baseball with wiffle balls. The RV park that we're here in Florida, there's a community of probably 50 people who play pickleball, and I love to play pickleball every morning, and I have a really great time doing it. Play poker and cards sometimes with friends here at night, but that's the simplicity of what my life is.
And where is here?
Fort Myers, Florida. I am awake and aware of the multidimensional nature of my being. And while my life here is very simple, I'm quite joyfully expressed and expressing in ways where physical limitations are not a barrier. And that's an awful lot of fun.
Are not a barrier.
Yeah, you know, there I don't have to get in a vehicle to move from here to there. I can just move. Mm-hmm. And I can have a body or not.
Well, it sounds like fun.
Well, it's all of our inheritance. I always think, you know, waking up or enlightenment is nothing more than who gives up first. You know, who gives up suffering first? You know, if you look at yourself, you might be honest, go, wow, I really do hold on to my suffering. What am I thinking about? But you know, enlightenment is not as special as everybody wants it to be. Even in the Course, I think he says it's not really a change at all, but it will change everything. So thank you for the question, Regina. That's our simple life and what we're up to now.
Right. Do you see any other questions up there for you, John Mark?
No, I think Susan was getting on Dawn for not actually asking a question.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Dawn, you're up.
Okay, so here's my question. I recently spoke with another spiritual teacher, kind of well-known, about a situation. My 15-year-old son is estranged from me. He doesn't speak to me. He hasn't spoken to me for a while. And it's funny that you mentioned the way you were describing surrender, because it is really big for me the way you're describing it, because the way I was surrendering was that, surrendering to the form or the way that things were happening instead of surrendering to the light that's within me. So perhaps that is the answer to the question of how do I cope with the extreme sadness that I feel from this son of mine that is no longer wants me in his life. And if I'm going to be real honest, it still breaks my heart.
So take a just nice deep breath and just honor yourself for a moment for speaking your truth and letting that off your chest. And I think all of you who have created an environment in which Dawn can be vulnerable and can share that. So I have no idea who this other teacher was, but I think everything I'm probably going to say is going to contradict what that being told you. And I'm not by any means suggesting I'm right and that being's wrong. It's for you to take within to your own knowing. And I trust that you will be guided and act perfectly appropriately for you. The source of our sadness is always contained within our separation. It's the sadness of a temporary thing separate from a temporary. And when all the only thing that we have are the temporary things informing our experience, and back to what Regina was talking about when I first came on, when that's our frame of reference and that's what we're looking from, to speak to my what is question, and what we are experiencing is reality, we can really, really suffer. When we can surrender to truly what is by resting, and for me, it almost feels like a reclining back, you know, behind the thoughts, behind the all the temporary things, and we connect to that eternal aspect of our being, the amount of incredible wisdom and acceptance, not through a strategy to be with, not through an evaluation of the choices you made or the different ones that you should have made, but just an utter unconditional embrace. From that place, we can finally get enough distance from the, you know, what Yeshua calls the battleground of the temporary. We rise above that, not because all of a sudden I have higher thought or I'm going to be more spiritual and blah, 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 but because in the sovereignty of your own being, using the power of your light, you rest back without need, without attachment, and we let that self inform us. You never know what's going to be shown to you about the nature of that soul, which is your son. You have no idea the journey that they have been on before, nor the purpose for which they engaged in this lifetime. And when we are truly informed by that light, it's like all of a sudden it becomes clear. Rather than this not knowing, because if you look at the temporary, you've got all this not knowing going on. When we rest back into that eternal by being what eternally is, and then we can be present with what is happening, that's where the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, if you want to call it that, can inform us and direct our thoughts, our feelings, our behaviors, our actions. So I have no idea if you want to do it privately at some point and you want me to actually tune into your son, which I can do, and kind of act as a medium for the Spirit, I'm happy to do that. This probably isn't the right context. But it may be that that being is coming to overcome a sense of abandonment by having another experience of abandonment. And I can speak to that for my own journey, because that was so much of what I came to overcome. You have no idea what's truly going on there or what's for the highest good of yourself. And that must always be paramount beyond our ideas of what I need, but for yourself as your own spirit in relation to what this other being's journey is. And I have my own journey with the child who, you know, if she was sitting here beside me, she would be countering everything I've told you guys and would be certain that we are all absolutely off our rockers, you know? So we can't truly embrace life because it's overwhelming. We don't know how to be with life. We don't know how to be with these painful situations. We don't know how to be with others who are in pain or are confused because they're likewise experiencing only the temporary with a sense of loss of that eternality. So when we rest back into that, that's where we can truly first answer our own call for love by closing the gap of our separation to receive that all-knowing, all-loving embrace. And then we can truly be informed beyond our perceptions of labels of motherhood and child and whatever else, and can then be moved in a way that can be truly helpful. And what that may be, I have no idea. I have no earthly idea, but I would never prescribe to you what you should or shouldn't do. I would invite you to get in communion with the Spirit and let that move you perfectly, because that's what you have to come to know and live as your own life, not the prescriptions of anyone else, no matter how enlightened or spiritual they may be. This is why so many of us have suffered, is we've tried to fulfill all those damn prescriptions. We should throw our prescription pads out and get honest and get true with that wisdom that is within us by truly being that eternal nature within. And once we can do that and let go of all I think this should be or it shouldn't be or what everybody else has told me, then love can truly inform us. And when it does, miracles happen. But the outcome of those miracles doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get together and kumbaya and do s'mores, you know. Who knows what it will be? But you will come to peace. You will have your own knowing. Whether the relationship transforms or not, the transformation will be you in relation to that Spirit within. And when you connect to that, you inevitably will know the Spirit within the other, and the fear that is so much the temporary will go away, because there'll be this eternal peace that you know of yourself and must also be true of your Son. And that's really the place with which you can then be moved in a way that would be truly inspired. So if that helps in any way, Dawn, great. If use it, if not, toss it out. If you want to get together and we can explore it more deeply, more intimately, let me know. You're not all that far away. If you want to come down from Tampa, we'll hang out for a while. But I would like some feedback if that resonates with you.
I'm going to have to listen to this whole thing again, because I was so caught up in the emotions that I feel, because I can feel peace and I can feel the light within me. But every time the thought of him and that he doesn't speak to me, it's just this sadness. It's so deep.
I honor that. And I would encourage you to follow it to its depth. I know that may not be comfortable, but once you rest as what truly is, at the depth of that will be a gift. If you're willing to take that journey to truly receive it, no longer because you want to forgive it and be rid of it, but because you want to know it. You want to know the source of what that is and what gift it has for you, because that's always some sense of separation. And if you can discover that within your own being and close that gap, not only will the sadness in this situation most likely transform, but your relationship to sadness itself will become something very, very different. So I love and honor your journey and your Son's journey. And I'm happy to support you both if it's relevant.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And thank you, John Mark. I see Rayla Daniels has her hand up.
Hi, Rayla. So it looks like she may need to
unmute. Okay. Can you hear me?
I can, thank you.
Great. I so deeply appreciate your response to that. I call it lost. I don't feel that is a habit. I don't feel that way anymore. I just worded it that way for 40 years and now it's habit. I was separated from my children when they were young against my will, and I suffered for 40 years. And I kept asking how to get beyond this grief that I couldn't let go of. And scenario was, of course, everything was my fault. And I was blessed to have a dream that revealed to me a big picture that I had not been aware of. And what had upset me is I was in a bad position with my three children and I wasn't able to take care of them financially. Their father refused to help. And I kept praying for a miracle for my children. But I had a preconceived idea that I had to be part of that miracle. They were my children.
Brilliant.
And what I had been shown is that I was never meant to be part of that miracle. The miracle he gave them was the difference between them crying themselves to sleep at night because they were hungry and we didn't have any food to. They went to live with their father and his new girlfriend and traveled all over the world and had name brand everything and went from utter poverty to filthy rich. So they received the miracle that I prayed for them. But I was crushed because I got left out of that. And their interpretation was that I had abandoned them. And I'm now 63. They're all in their 40s. And still none of them speak to me. They don't have anything to do with me. And so when I had this dream, I was completely, the thing that amazed me in the dream is I was completely relieved of any guilt feeling for any decisions that I made. Because it was shown in the dream that that was not what it was about. There was a completely different purpose at play. And I had misinterpreted everything that had happened. There was a different plan that had been for their life. And the plan was for us to be separated, for them to have their miracle. And then I was to have my own path. And so a few years down the road then, I adopted a multi-disabled child. And so that ended up being my path, which I could have never done had I had the path that I thought was supposed to be mine because they were my children. I'm sorry, I have to laugh at it now because I was so stuck on that. They're mine. And I realize now they're not mine. They never were mine. They're God's. And what was I thinking? And when I look now at the 27 years that I've been able to sit at my disabled daughter's feet, and she's been my greatest guru, I have been blessed beyond anything I could have ever imagined. And so I got a miracle, but it didn't come in a way that I had expected. And I had asked, you know, what am I to do as far as, because for years I had tried to, I would just have to call, push myself on them. You know, hey, don't forget I love you, you know, emails and all kinds of stuff. And I was reading Cameo 1 out of the Course in Miracles, the CE edition. And in the cameo, Jesus tells Helen, you don't give miracles where you want to. You don't get to pick and choose your favorite people and where you want to do it. I tell you where you're to give love, and I tell you where you're to give the miracles. It's called under instruction. And where you're not supposed to, you don't. And that spoke so deeply to me. And I realized I was trying to push love into a door that was not going to open. And so I was wasting energy trying to push something into happening where I have been given this beautiful blessing that I've been able to pour love into my disabled daughter that he so graciously put into my life to be my teacher. And I felt so relieved by that and so set free that it almost sounds bad, but I'm so joyful now that I can see the bigger picture and I'm so it's a shame, I guess. Maybe I wasn't supposed to. I don't know. But I think, man, if I would have known that to begin with, I could have been happy for 40 years. I didn't know. So I was in my sadness and loss and grief for 40 years for nothing because I didn't understand the plan. I didn't understand that I was never supposed to be there beyond in their lives beyond that time. And I love the way that you wrote that, that you don't know what their journey is and what their lesson is. And apparently they have their own lesson. And the Course in Miracles says something about our only job is atonement for ourselves. And so I feel as though that has just come alive inside of me to where this is about me returning to my true self and the blessing that I received. I could have never come up with anything so wonderful as what I have with my disabled daughter. I could have never in a million years, I couldn't have dreamed that up. And she's been the greatest blessing in my entire life. And that would never have been able to happen had I had the power to unfold things the way I wanted to. So anyway, I just wanted to thank you for the answer because it just rings so true in my heart because of me having just gone through that. So thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm complete.
You're very welcome, Ryla. I'll just mention one of my favorite little things that Yeshua told me one time in my own communion with him as I was on my journey. He said, expectations are a present choice for a future disappointment. Now, you know, if you still have a real healthy dose of that new age thought thing and you're trying to create with thought in the future, blah, 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 I assure you that no matter what you might be imagining it is you want, as Ryla has so beautifully described here, the gifts that we are offered are always significantly greater. So the next time you find yourself disturbed, you've lost your peace because an expectation hasn't been met. Wow. Remember that expectation is always voluntary and that you can let go of living in those expectations or living in the need for them if you wish, because chances are you don't know and you can't know, but there's something greater than all of us that does. So use that one if it works for you, that expectations are a present choice for a future disappointment.
That's great. That's great. We've got about 10 minutes left. Did anybody here have anything they wanted to ask John Mark? Anybody in the room? No? Anybody out there have anything they want to ask John Mark?
I see Jay on the phone. I just want to say hey to Jay because I actually know him personally, and I saw on Facebook that he's moving or something, I guess, from the
Midwest. Moving right here behind us.
Yeah, well, great. I just want to celebrate him.
Christopher and then Hal.
Great.
Hey, can you hear me?
I can. Hi, Christopher.
Hey. So first off, thank you for being here tonight. And
a blast. So thanks for having me.
Cool. Yeah, me too. This has been wonderful. I recently saw one of your laughter group videos, and I just wanted to thank you for that because I watched the one where you showed up about 13 minutes late.
Yeah.
And I laughed for about 8 minutes. The entire video, I just laughed and laughed. And it was just such a joy to share in that continuous laughter. It felt like such a wonderful release. I personally feel like, you know, especially being on this spiritual path, sometimes I can hold in that laughter and hold in that joy. And that was just a great reminder, just like let it out and just laugh. And especially about mistakes too, because I personally can be hard on myself when it comes to mistakes. So it's like, oh, I made a mistake. Fantastic. So yeah, I just want to say thank you for that.
And, well, thank you, Christopher. You're yes. Welcome. You're welcome. I'm always amazed and love to hear how people come to interact with any of Cindy and I's work. I will mention just real quickly, because it was an interesting stage of my journey when I was learning to manifest feeling states at will rather than in response to situations and circumstances. You know, learning true laughter without needing something to happen to be funny. Learning true joy without needing to have something good happen to make me feel that way. And not just with good emotions, but with negative ones too. Pure anger just for the sake that I am a sovereign child of God and I can create that expression as I choose. So when I was learning that I was the authority over, and this is beyond thinking, this is into our emotional body and subtler vibrational states, that those are under our authority. And I was learning in that laughter thing that Christopher's talking about was one of the stages of my journey where I was learning to manifest those at my will, at the choice, not because they were happening outside. Because the truth of the matter is the peace that we all want is there. The joy that we all want is there. We've just made it conditional on everything outside of us rather than it being our own sovereign choice to express within. So I'm glad that touched you, Christopher, and maybe this will invite you into a deeper exploration of the full range of the emotional state. And I would encourage you not to just do the nicey-niceys, but to also learn that you can be, you know, ragefully angry and in a moment switch it over to ecstatic laughter. And you'll learn that you are that eternal thing, not the temporary things, and that as the eternal, you have authority over the temporal things within the sovereignty of your own being. Yeah, cool. Who was next?
Hal.
Well, hello.
Hi, Hal.
Thank you for your visit tonight and all your words of wisdom. I had something come up, and it's been repeating in the last few days, actually weeks. And I think Regina spoke of it today. She mentioned it again about how very few of us will awaken. I've even read it in some of the ancient writings where I think it's in the Upanishads or something, however you pronounce that, that one in a billion of us will awaken. And I used to think, it's kind of a crude analogy, but you know, in the reproductive cycle, in all the male species that eject sperm, there's only one or two that make it into the egg, and the rest of them all die off. And I'm thinking humanity is kind of the same way, but there's so many of us born and come into this life and die, and very few of us awaken. And I was thinking about that actually today, and I was thinking, you know what? It's okay. It's all right. And there was a feeling of relief, a release, so to speak, when I finally said, you know what? Whatever happens, happens. In that sense, not that I will turn into a raging maniac and drug addict and all those other things, but and I'll still stay the course, but I just wanted to get your thought about what I just said.
And I'll drop well, I do honor that only one sperm seems to get the prize, but boy, they all get a fun journey.
And they don't know, they're not thinking about it either. It's just going like hell, right?
Well, I'll leave the analogy there and won't make more of it except to say that, you know, they're all participating in the journey. With all due respect to the Upanishads and all of these ancient teachings, this is a different time now. This is the time of the second coming, not through one, but through many. And that very well may have been the case when that text was written, that one in a billion. But back then, that one would be doing it with maybe one other being. Just look at who we've got here tonight. And this is one thing that is happening all across the world. I mean, I bet you a third of Zoom's business has something spiritual at its core. So I would take exception that it does not feel true to me at all that it is the exclusive territory that it once seemed to be. I will certainly honor that the idea of awakening is accepted by many, many beings, but they might not have the wherewithal to take the whole journey. Because we like the idea of, oh, I'd love to be one with God. Wow, that'd get me all kinds of power. I bet I'd get what I want and blah, blah, blah. You know, the idea sounds really, really great. But what's required of us each within the sovereignty of being to take that journey, we might not have the stomach for right now. But we are eternal souls and we will come to it. We will all come to it because we can't sleep and be sleepy time forever. But I do believe very, very strongly. And if the visions that I have seen in my own inner consciousness are true, we are well past the very low, low, low numbers of awakening. You know, what we are experiencing and stages of journeys that we're all going through, you may pass through a stage in a year or two that might have taken many, many, many lifetimes before. Just access to the caliber and quality of spiritual teachings that are available, you would have had to take a mystery journey to hopefully find some sacred text buried in, I mean, either literally buried or hidden away. Now all you got to do is Google. So I am full of extraordinary joy and incredible hope that we are coming to the second coming. Not because Jesus is going to come in a chariot, although he may, but because we are doing what we're doing right here and right now. And the truth of the matter is that when one awakens, it becomes easier for the next. And then the next, and then the next, and then the next. And in the way of Master, Yeshua even spells out the number of awakened beings that he says we need to tip the scale for all of humanity. And it is an incredible, it's like 10 million. And that may sound like a lot for those of you who relate numbers to money, but it's less than 0.00001% of humanity. To tip the scale for the whole planet. So I have no doubt in my being about the nature of my journey, nor the nature of anyone who's been brought to what you guys are creating with Awakening Together. Will you see it through? Will you turn away from an uncomfortable doorway and come back to it later? You may. Will you discover what truly is and know that you're absolutely safe and that you can start running through doorways like a streaker and be perfectly safe and move through things with great ease and great speed. So I do celebrate your release, Hal, in letting go of I have to, because that's only held within our ego, because in truth, we all already are. So you may have let go of the striving aspect, and that will bring you to a threshold to rest more deeply in what truly is that eternal that I mentioned earlier. And that may quite profoundly accelerate your journey. So, but I honor your journey, partner. Thank you.
John Mark, we're out of time, dig on it.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I had a blast.
We did. Yay. We had a ball. It's wonderful to see you. We really want you to come here and see us physically when you can. And thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your wisdom, your humor, for all of it. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I trust and honor all of your journeys, and please walk yours. Let everybody else be responsible for theirs. We don't have to be everybody's helper. They've got the spirit within. They're going to have to find it on their own eventually anyway. Honor your journey and walk it with as much authenticity as you can, and I'm certain all will be well.
Amen.
Thank you for having me.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.